Hello and welcome back. This is Fast Talkers with me, Jenny Gow. Delighted to have you along. Remember, you can subscribe so this drops into your inbox as soon as we have another episode ready.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Fast Talkers as we chat amongst paddock folk about all things Formula One. And we have a stellar panel lined up for you today because the championship is a feisty affair and we think this one's going to be just as feisty. So let me go first to our commentator extraordinaire for Dutch TV, Ziggo Sport. It is Olav Mol. Olav, it's lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, it's a pity we have to talk to Michael. So we'll see how that works out. And Rebecca, I don't know. So we can sort of start getting acquainted.
Yeah.
Olav has been in the sport for a while, as you can tell. 500 Grand Prix well and truly ticked off. Have you got a golden pass now?
That doesn't work that way anymore nowadays. I mean, I think they have something like a wall of famish or whatever in the paddock club where they put your name on. I haven't seen it because I can't go there, funny enough. But it's like, and this is my 31st season in Formula One as a commentator. So I've taken over basically the old granddad position, which used to be for Murray.
Well, in Murray's name, we will let you have the title for the time being. And because that's you have it. The most ornate chandelier in the background as well, which I think Murray would have approved of. It's a thing of beauty.
Austria, hotel rooms, that's not my choice.
yeah. You take it with you everywhere you go.
yeah, it's my chandelier.
So obviously we have a Dutch commentator. We need to level the playing field and have an English journalist, in fact a motor racing correspondent for the Times. It is Rebecca Clancy. Lovely to have you here. How are you finding the season so far, Beck?
Hi, yeah, it's been good so far. Thanks for having me on. I am not at the races, sadly, although by the look of that Austrian hotel room, I've done pretty well to avoid it. Yeah, it's been good. It's been exciting, actually, because at the start, we were obviously all bigging up this rivalry between Verstappen and Hamilton. And there were a few comments, shall we say, made on social media that we were hyping up nonsense and that Hamilton would run away with it. So it's quite satisfying that it has come to where we are now, shall we say. But I'm only in my fifth season, so I feel like an absolute rookie.
Doesn't matter. You'll get there.
And next up, we are going to the only state in Australia that isn't in lockdown for once. It is Michael Laminato. Michael, it's delightful to have you on here. Normally, we're chatting about strategy in your podcast, but you're going to talk about all things F1.
Yes, good day or good day, I suppose, from
good
my
evening,
stranded island
surely.
Of Australia. Yes, you can tell this is going to be a very difficult one to white balance whoever's editing this, because you can tell who's coming from a different time zone. It's certainly none of you.
Just tell me about the picture behind you over your right shoulder. What is that?
I believe this one's from Finland. Next to one from Mexico, further behind me, and the Eiffel Tower is above me. I can't tell you where they came from because I don't know, other than those countries. I wish I had a better story. Next time we'll be more prepared. I did put them up. I can say that one. I put the hooks in the wall. That was me. They came from the local hardware. I can give you directions if you need.
He knows more about the hooks than he does about the pictures. I love it. Well, it's great to have you all on. Thank you so much. And let's start with how this battle between Lewis and Max is going. Because to me, Olav, it seems like Max is in a pretty good place.
He is. And we must not forget that I feel that Max as a person was able of doing what he's showing us now since 3-4 years. But he, at that point, he didn't have the car to show it. And he had to mature by staying calm and knowing when there was an opportunity, he would take it, he would pick it, but never was in contention, like really in contention. And now he is. He feels comfortable. He just feels comfortable. And what I like about Max is that every time he ticks a box, he says, okay, we've ticked that box, put a line and start over again. It needs to be spot on again for the next race. He doesn't go like, looks like we have a better package, so that means we can relax a bit. And he keeps everybody on his toes, and that's what I like. I mean, unlike years ago's when he crosses the finish line or in an interview afterwards, he now realizes that it's not just him and the guys in the garage, but also all these people in the factory. He's not doing it the way Lewis always does. You know, he starts off with everybody in the grandstand and then thank everybody in the factory and then thank everybody in the government and then says, oh, it was a good race. But there is a little change there in Max. He realizes that it actually is a team effort.
Olaf, can I ask you a slightly random question? Because you've talked about Max's maturity, which obviously comes with age as well. It's his seventh season, but he's still only 23. But on social media, he's posted a lot more about his girlfriend, Kelly Piquet. And from the looks of it, they're living together with her daughter. And in the UK, Sir Alex Ferguson, the Manchester United manager, he always wanted his players to settle down young because he said it took away all the distraction and then they could solely focus on playing football. Do you think there's anything similar with Max going on here, that his home life is so settled, so grounded, it gives him another level of maturity?
I wouldn't know anything about his personal life, to be honest, apart from the fact that I know that he's very happy that he has a solid place he calls home. That's the thing. And maybe that has to do also with the fact that his parents were divorced, so then you have to choose between things. So having your own home, place where you go back, talk with your friends, do whatever you like, scratch your knee whenever you like, scratch your ear whenever you like, and nobody moans about it. I think that helps. And I think because of that, it makes him calm. And you know, I never met Kelly. You know, she apparently was in a picture the other day when the ceremony was on. I was going to the guy next to me. Who's that? That's Kelly. Oh, okay. Because I'm into racing. I'm into wheels and steering wheels and wings and everything. I don't really mind the side part.
The idea that, you know, maybe it is a settled home life, compare that to what, let's say, the old timers used to say, was that as soon as you had kids, you'd lose tenths of a second, right? Like, maybe the idea is you've got to have kids really young, like super young in Formula One, get it out of the way, and then you'll be right.
That's what Fernando Alonso always said, wasn't it? Fernando was absolutely convinced that he would never settle down while he was a racing driver.
Must be why he keeps racing, right?
Must be why he had a bunch of girlfriends, because I live in Spain, I see Spanish television, and the other day there was a program and I said to my wife, she's sort of good looking, and she said, yeah, that's one of Alonso's ex-girlfriends. And I thought, oh, okay, good enough, nice music, oh, very good music in the program, fantastic music, that's what I always say.
There's Olaf telling us he's not interested in people's private lives, but yet he's clocked Alonso's girlfriend. Excellent.
Yeah, my wife did. I didn't. She pointed out to me. I didn't have a clue, but I can tell you she is good looking. And this program is on an aisle, and she's walking around sort of, well, half cheeky-jacky.
I can't imagine what kept you watching on. It's just bizarre to me.
The music.
Bet, just talk to me a little bit about if we see a more mature Max and someone who's now kind of having a very sort of stable approach to racing, how does that compare to Lewis Hamilton, who still hasn't settled down, who's now got a challenge on his hands for a world championship?
He's got Roscoe, his beloved bulldog, who goes with him absolutely everywhere. Lewis is extremely mature. We know this. 36 years old now, absolute veteran of the sport, 7 world titles to his name. So I don't think maturity is an issue for him. We don't see him traditionally making mistakes. He doesn't get hot under the collar. His ability to read the percentages between risk and reward are like no one else's. So his judgment on the track is, you know, second to none, really, in my opinion. Away from the track, he is exceptionally private. We know this. We see pictures of his dog, and that's about it. Every now and again, there might be a girl in the back of a picture, and we're all sort of scrambling around to be like, oh, has he got a girlfriend? What's going on? Trying to find out a bit more about his life. But, you know, that's a side that he keeps to himself, and that's absolutely up to him. And the way he lives his life, it seems to work for him. I was just watching, actually, earlier, he was doing a fan's question, and he was saying that it was really lovely, actually. And he was just saying that the fan just asked him how he was. A very basic question, but quite a powerful question, and an important question given the year that we've all just had. And he just said, you know, thanks so much for asking. Actually, it's been really tough. There's been some mental health, you know, surrounding the whole year for all of us. And I've lived in a bubble, and it's just been me and Angela. And he's referring to Angela Cullen, his physio and right-hand woman, basically. And the two of them have just been going around together. And I imagine that's been pretty tricky because, you know, he is quite a sociable fellow. And we've seen him, you know, a couple of races ago between, I think it was France and the Styrian. He was in New York doing some work. So he does obviously get out. But and he's had COVID as well. We know that. He obviously doesn't want it again. So he does very much stick to his bubbles where possible. And so it has been a tricky year for him. And he hasn't, you know, as we talk about with Max, they're going home to his family life. He doesn't have that. He goes home to his dog, or, you know, the dog Roscoe's at most of the races anyway. So they travel back together. But it doesn't seem to bother him that much at the moment. And I think he takes the, you know, as Michael was just saying, that the sort of old guard approach of he'll do that side of his life. And he talks to us about it. He says, you know, when I stop racing, we say, you know, well, you'll end up being a pundit, won't you? Like everyone else who's told us that they won't do it, and then they go on and do it. And he's like, no, when I'm done, I'm done. I'm walking away and I'm having my family. You know, he's renovating a house in West London at the moment. And I think it's almost finished, actually. And, you know, surprisingly, because he doesn't really talk about it much, he was saying, oh, you know, the house is nearly finished. It's really exciting. It's going to be my base in the UK. Hopefully I'll be able to raise my family there. So he is certainly thinking about it. But at the moment, it's not his priority. His priority is just beating Max.
Michael, I'm fascinated to know, how are the press reporting this battle between Max and Lewis out there in Australia?
Well, I mean, depressingly, because Daniel Ricciardo inevitably features in the headline. So it's sort of a bit of a mixed situation. But there is excitement about the idea that Lewis Hamilton's domination is being challenged, because that, of course, has been the story the last 7 years, really, and can get repetitive. And it is, I think, we're sort of talking about this just before we started the show, that, I mean, when was the last time we had a season that was this? I know we're only 8 rounds in, so maybe we need to, you know, relax about it, but that was genuinely competitive, of course, between two teams, and with the prospect of, I know, of course, Ferrari tried a couple of years ago, and Red Bull did even a little bit before that, but that has the prospect of going the distance. I think that is exciting people, because you turn up now, or you turn on the television in Australia, and you don't know what's going to happen. And that's, I mean, that's what sport's meant to be, I suppose, is what Formula One hasn't been for a while. And it is keeping people tuned in.
In that light, Michael, and also to Rebecca, I wanted to ask you, because over the last couple of days, couple of races, more colleagues of ours came to me, asked me about it. In that light, where you say, we love the racing, we love what we see on television, Formula One says we race as one. In that light, how do you see the various comments made by Toto Wolff and Mercedes? Like this weekend, they suddenly came up, how come Red Bull spend all this money? That's what they say. What they mean is, are they within the rules of the budget cap? But they don't see it. Mm-hmm. But they have all these implications where I feel is un-Mercedes-like. I would have loved Toto Wolff to say, I'm gutted that Red Bull beats me. I hate it that Max Verstappen wins, but I guess the fans at home see really good races. I mean, these guys have been dominating for 6 years on engine power. And the only thing they talk about is, where do we lose out? On the straights. We lose out on the straights. So they're implicating that Red Bull's done something with that engine. Maybe Red Bull and Honda build an engine with 950 power on it, only used 920 for the beginning of the season because they weren't sure whether it was reliable, changed something on the cooling, and they put them on 950 now. So they're taking more power out of the engine, but they haven't put more power in. But they keep in all these implications, and I don't like it, to be honest. It's not Mercedes-like. Mm. It's like it's childish, sore loser-ish. I'm not saying they are, but it surprises me. Does it surprise you as well?
Doesn't surprise me, no. I mean, we've seen it in years gone by between different teams. I agree, it's very un-Mercedes-like, because they are very much quite a closed-off team, and we very rarely know what's going on behind closed doors. What surprised me is at how challenged they feel, and I'm not sure that's really coming across at the moment. So they have got all their tools in their box, and they are now realising that actually they might need the FIA on side slightly. So they are making comments knowing that the FIA is always listening. We've seen it with the rear wing, and they got exactly what they wanted from that. And we're seeing it now with the engine. So I presume the hope is that the FIA are going to look into the engine. But I agree with you, Olaf. I think what's happened, and Red Bull are well within their rights, the regulations state that they could do this. I agree that what they've done is turned up with an engine, a few niggles, few reliability problems, and within the rules they are allowed to fix those bugs, and then they are now able to push the engine much harder, which is where they're finding the straight line speed. Also, just the laws of nature, physics, means that after 7 years of stable regulations, pretty much stable regulations, the gap will close. So there was always going to end up being this challenge to Mercedes at some point. Ferrari tried, they fell off towards the end. Red Bull are putting together very, very good challenge. But also, I think one of the other issues, Red Bull have wrestled Mercedes because they've gone in and poached a lot of their staff. Mercedes were once the team where you always wanted to work. They were always the champions. They were the place that you wanted to be. Red Bull went in and said, we'll take your staff. We're taking over the Honda program. So you've got the best of the best. Here we come. And they've done exactly that. And I think that's rattled a few people at Mercedes as well.
I was just going to say, I wonder if there's an additional dimension to this, because the last time Mercedes felt like it was actually being beaten on merit was when Ferrari was running an engine that was not cheating. And by rattling the cages at that time, I know also Red Bull was rattling the cages at that time as well, but Mercedes did play a part. They did uncover that actually the gains that Ferrari were making were not 100% maybe allegedly in the rules. And subsequently, before that ruling was made, of course, Mercedes and Toto Wolff talked about it, how hard they worked to try and find gains in the power unit that they assumed were not possible to be found. And then they did, and of course, everyone suffered a little bit. They were overworked. Potentially, they've lost people from the engine department because of that work lifestyle trying to find those gains when they didn't have to. So the idea now that maybe this only other time they've been beaten, there must be skepticism in the ranks that, well, maybe it's not all 100% above board. I'm not saying that is the case, of course, but there must be that in the back of the mind, right? The only other time you've been beaten this year was when someone was playing outside the rules.
True. And what they say, and that's one of the same lines I don't like, we stopped developing the car. What they mean, if they win it, it's because we didn't try. And I don't think that's fair, because they do try, and they need to try, and they're obliged as a six-time world champion to do that. And the way they sort of operate now, and mainly in the press, because then 2 days later, James Ellison says, we are developing stuff, and we're doing this. It's sort of me, it's like, I like to talk to Toto and ask him straight away what I said to you now. Why do you do that? Because you don't need to. If you race under the banner, we race as one, you should know that these kind of races, the fans love. These kind of races, the fans have been waiting for years. Once in an interview, I asked Toto, you win all these races by a big margin, but you have a racing heart as well. Wouldn't you love to have a race where you with two corners to go, take the lead and win it? And he says, yes, my racing heart says yes, but all the logos of my sponsors up here say, you better win it with 30 seconds ahead. So it is inside of the racing. His racing heart must be still there, but he's saying all these other things, which to me, I don't really like.
Olaf, can I ask you, in the Dutch media, what do you think will happen this season? Because in the UK, the British media, we feel that Lewis has a tendency to turn up in the second half of the year when it really matters and put his foot down, and we think that he'll still win the championship. We think it will go all the way down to the wire, but the general feeling in the British media is that Lewis Hamilton will probably win his eighth. What's the feeling over there?
The feeling, well, you have all the Orange Army who thinks Max is champion already, like, that went well with the soccer team and the European championship. So we don't go that way. I don't go that way. The good thing is he's got a fight on his hands. And the other thing in the media is it looks like there will be a proper chance to win it, but there's a lot in between. What I said this race, last race on Sunday, I said, to me, a key factor possibly will be Silverstone Grand Prix, although that's not a normal one because we have the qualifying race and everything. But if Red Bull come out on top at the Silverstone Grand Prix by a good margin, then I think they're sort of tick another important box for Mercedes to say, oops, now we're seriously. Because also the deficit they have is not about a tenth or half a tenth. It's like 2/10, 3/10, which in the old days they just turned up their engine and they were 3/10 ahead, and they can't anymore. So basically, I feel if a team has an advantage, no matter whether it's Red Bull or Mercedes or whoever, if you have that advantage, you don't lose out on it too quickly. And if it's true, what Toto says, that they are sort of half developing this car for this year, then they won't be able to make it up. Then Red Bull will stay ahead.
Lewis won't allow them to stop developing, will he? There's no way he won't be pushing for more upgrades to the car.
But surely the decision's fundamentally been made, right? Like, even if it's not, they haven't stopped in the way that Toto Wolff has sort of suggested is the case, the wind tunnel time's been converted at this point, surely. Yeah. I mean, we are halfway through the year at this point, even if we're not halfway through the season. I don't know that he really gets to choose.
I know it's not that easy to just switch the programme. And obviously, they've drawn up a schedule for this year. They're saying about 2022. Mm-hmm. But if he's sat there demanding, they've got to be looking at even small, going back to the computers and, you know, some CAD drawings, or they've got to be looking at something, surely. I don't quite believe that they're not going to have spent the last 3 days sat in front of a computer trying to work out what they can possibly do to bring change.
I agree with you. I think something very strange is happening at Mercedes, and whether it's just the fact that they're rattled and haven't been challenged and put under this kind of forensic spotlight for so many years, or whether there's something more fundamental going on, I don't know, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of it, as are we all, I'm sure. But certainly the differing of opinions between James Allison and Toto Wolff about whether they are or are not developing the car anymore, these throwing stones and accusations, as you say, Olaf, to be more than usual, and they're shouting very loudly about what everybody else is doing. It seems to me a little bit unsportsmanlike and un-Mercedes-like, because Mercedes have always held themselves to such high account. I don't know if they're covering themselves in glory, Beck, by actually bringing all these things to the attention and kind of having this very open spat with F1.
No, I don't actually think it looks great for the sport when you've got the world champions out there complaining constantly about their competitors, and Red Bull turn around and say, look, they can say what they like, they can do what they like, we're just going to focus on what we're doing, and it's obviously working for them. And then Mercedes come out with all these accusations, or what we're perceiving to be accusations is obviously worded very carefully. So it's not a great look for them. And they're definitely getting a bit tetchy about it. But there is a lot of instability within Mercedes at the moment. And, you know, just look at, aside from having mentioned about the engine, look at Lewis Hamilton's contract. So every week, every race, Lewis has a contract going. Okay, so he's just told us that they've started. Toto tells us that they're very chilled out, that it's fine, it's going to go ahead. Speculation now that we'll have a contract before the summer, which I think absolutely has to happen, because this is causing yet another distraction for the team. And Red Bull have got Max Verstappen signed up until the end of 2024, so they can just sit back and watch and say, look, you do what you want. Oh, by the way, have you noticed our second driver who we've just signed is doing a really good job while yours isn't? So, you know, if you two just want to keep going around in circles, and, oh, have you sorted out Bottas's contract yet? Oh, no, we'll just leave you to do that, because I think we'll probably sign Perez for another year. You know, this all adds to the tension between the teams. And within the paddock, you know, we've all spent plenty of time within the paddock. We know that Toto Wolff and Christian Horner have a mutual respect for each other, shall we say, professionally, but they don't like each other. And they don't even particularly pretend to hide it either. And so actually what's happening now is that that's coming to the fore a bit more, and we're getting to see that a little bit more. And, you know, they don't mind throwing sticks at each other. And it makes it more interesting. You know, we're talking a lot more about what's going on off the track than what's, as well as what's on it. Obviously, that's very interesting. So it's just a really interesting time. It's the beginning of, and a great timing. Jen, you know, you're involved with the Netflix documentary. More and more people are watching F1. So it's great for the sport, and it's great for us. It keeps us in a job.
Spot on. That is spot on.
We like
it. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like it's, I mean, okay, maybe you can say, you know, maybe by the end of the year, depending on how the championship pans out, Mercedes won't look super polished if they've been throwing these little grenades and nothing comes of them. But, I mean, I think it's great. Like, that's the human element, right? Like, these guys are under pressure and they're squirming a little bit, and as a result, they're kind of having a crack at other people, and maybe that works out, maybe that boosts morale, maybe it doesn't, like... It's so easy to criticize Formula One for being too robotic. And while it's, you know, it would be great, of course, they'd all love close racing, and we'd love to just end every race with everyone shaking hands and going, yes, very good race, a very entertaining Grand Prix. But on the other hand, I think it's great that you have at the end of the race people hating losing and getting a bit snarky at one another. I think that is the human element coming through. And I feel like if we criticize it now, when we lack that element in seasons that are dominant, we'll be missing it again. I reckon this is great.
And unfortunately for you, Daniel Ricciardo is no part of this discussion.
No, I mean, no, absolutely not. I mean, Michael, he could start throwing grenades Daniel Ricciardo? If he wanted. Maybe it would help.
Yeah, talk to
it might make the car faster.
It might make the car faster, yeah. I mean, look, the car's pretty fast.
Lando's doing pretty good. Right. We're pretty happy here in Britain with Lando.
Yeah, yes, look, you've got a backup driver in case Lewis doesn't turn up one weekend. That's always
good. We've got two backup drivers.
We've got two, actually.
We're pretty happy over here. Sorry, Michael.
The shame about the Mercedes power unit, wasn't it? But I never thought you'd say that. But
McLaren were fastest through the speed trap in the Styrian Grand Prix.
When they could get the car through the speed trap.
They must be cheating, like Red Bull. Look, with Daniel, it's confusing. I mean, from the Australian perspective, the way it's sort of being received here is, I mean, there are a couple of different ways it's being received. Some people are having PTSD flashbacks from the way Sebastian Vettel dealt with Mark Webber, and I think they're sort of convulsing over that. And I think that's the wrong way to take it because it's a very different situation. And some people, I think, have realized that actually Daniel's been in the sport for a decade now, and obviously Lando's in only his third season, and it feels a little bit like a premature twilight to his career, which is not the case, but I think some people are taking it like that and feel like the ship has sailed on this one. But look, his struggles are obviously much more severe than any other drivers that have changed teams or in Fernando Alonso's case has come back to the sport. But I mean, I think there are enough signs that we shouldn't be despondent about it. There are enough signs in the last two or three races that it doesn't feel as though, you know, this is it. This is the end of his career. It's come to nothing at McLaren. In fact, there were some parts of the Austrian Grand Prix, before lap 7 in particular, when, you know, you could see that he was starting to get to grips with the car. The qualifying is going to take longer, clearly, because that's when he struggles with this car at their most severe, when you're putting it on the limit. But it will be interesting to see how he does approach the rest of the season, because, I mean, it's redundant to say Lando Norris is a head start now. It's over almost, considering the advantage he has there. But it's about building that up to the end of the year to bounce into next season now.
Yeah, so he's got two fights. You know, and the one fight is getting closer to Lando, and the other fight is, when he does that, is getting closer to the other team. Because so far, you can say, in Daniel's way, it's rather disappointing, too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But at least he can say that McLaren is faster than Alpine. So at least it's got that in his back pocket, I guess, having made that correct decision. But it does, in the grander scheme of things, it is a step back, isn't it? If the step was towards the title, he personally, despite the car, has taken a step back from last year. I mean, his stocks were so high at the end of 2020. And I mean, he's dealing with it well. I think he's the guy to deal with it well. He's got the right psychology for it. I think that's one real positive from the Red Bull program, is that you tend to have the psychology for it if you make it. It's just about putting that into practice now. At least he's got a very long season to do it with.
Yeah, still 15 races to go. Daniel Ricciardo's got good people around him.
Well, that means.
Oh, Daniel Ricciardo's got very good people around him as well, though, hasn't he? You talk about his psychology, but he has surrounded himself. He's got the two guys, and obviously Michael's a school friend, and Blake he knows from his Red Bull days. So, and the three of them are a quite close unit.
When we get to the end of the Daniel Ricciardo chapter, however it is to end, I feel like that's what will be gained from leaving Red Bull in the first place. People will inevitably ask this season, should he have left Red Bull Racing if in fact they're on a championship winning season, because obviously that's like a sliding doors moment, right? But what he gained from becoming independent is tightening that network and becoming a different kind of driver, a driver who was free from the place he grew up, if you like. He's likened it to that coming of age story, hasn't he? So that is one certain positive, if that's going to be the question asked for him this year, if Max wins the title. But I mean, look, it's all in his hands at this point.
But he left Red Bull for the right reasons, didn't he? Like, Max was the number one driver. So even if Max fights the championship, Daniel Ricciardo was never going to, let's be honest. And he must know that in the back of his mind.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. You need to have a team that's your team. There's no question about that. But inevitably, I mean, it's the question Fernando used to get when he left Ferrari, is that, you know, do you regret considering he ended up in McLaren, which was terrible? But, I mean, he was right to say, at least, that as long as they're not winning titles, and what difference does it make? He only wants to win titles. So, you know, I think that does make sense.
But also, nice guys don't become world champions. I sometimes try to name five nice guys who became world champion. I started with Jenson Button, Damon Hill, then I start to think. And if you think the other way around, there need to be a-holes every now and then, and they can be. Max can be that. Lewis can be that. Senna could be that. Prost could be that. Mansell could be that. All of them. I mean, but nice guys generally don't get championship. Mark Webber never got a championship because he's a nice guy. Daniel Ricciardo will never become champion because he's too much of a nice guy. Ocon, too much of a nice guy. In my opinion, those type of guys, they lack that part of where they sort of do that if it's necessary.
I don't know if that applies to Daniel. He's obviously a very nice guy, but nice guy, it doesn't translate into the car, does it? You know, I don't think the nice guy carries into the car. And, you know, in terms of the finishing move, if you like, the move I think Valtteri Bottas, for example, lacks, is not the case with Daniel. I feel like he's the guy who gets the job done in the car. If he doesn't win a world title, I don't think it's going to be because he's too nice. But, I mean, look, that's...
I just look at history. I just look at history.
He doesn't nice feel guys. Like
oh, look, that's true. I think your trend, you're right. Like, that's the trend. But then yeah. You've also named some drivers who were nice guys who won the title. So it's sort of self-defeat. Wow. Yeah.
But Danny Rick doesn't feel like he's the honey badger this year, does he? Has he lost the edge slightly? Or is it just the car? He's struggling with the car.
Isn't it? I mean, the honey badger element's the feeling on the brakes at the end of the day. And it even took him quite a while to get that at Renault. So... I don't think it's an attitude problem or a psychology problem. It really is a physical problem, if you like. I think it really is just a matter of getting to grips with that.
My worry for Daniel is that, I mean, we talk about it not being a psychological problem yet, but how long until it does become a psychological issue for him? Because if you can't understand what's going wrong with your ability to drive a car, the team can't understand exactly what's going wrong, you start to look inside yourself, don't you, and take layers away to try and get to the bottom of it. And if you take too many of those layers away, then what are you left with? Do you have the true essence of who you are, or have you actually muddied the water so much that you can't do what you used to do?
The first sign of the team trying to help him will be give him a new chassis, because that always ticks off a box. It did with Bottas. So if he's struggling and he can't pinpoint it out, give him a new chassis. So that means you got a new flat line, a new zero line, and go from there. Apart from the psychological effect that comes into your system, but as soon as McLaren gives him a new chassis, you know that they've talked more about it than they're willing to tell us.
I think as well, it helps that he's coming off a very strong season. Like it was an undoubtedly strong season. And it's also not as though he's coming into a team with a world champion who's established there, who's just was already operating at a level. And that's not having a crack at Lando Norris, because I think he's also taken a substantial step forward this season. But it's not it doesn't feel at least like a year where he's been shown to be wanting against a proven quantity, if you like. At the moment, you can still very easily say, you know, Lando's been here for 2 years now. This is his third season. The car is a particular car to drive. He says Carlos Sainz told him that after they'd already essentially switched contracts, if you like. There are reasons for him not to have to start to wonder if it's him. It is him, but if it's his ability, I should say. At least not yet. Maybe Lando Norris is actually substantially better than any of us have even realized. Maybe he's just on level 11 at the moment. But I think there's still time for him to not have those doubts this year.
Okay, let's move on to talk about the Australian Grand Prix. Whilst we've got you, Michael, I think the world would be really keen to come to Australia in November. I, for one, please invite me, because yeah, we'll all love it. What are the chances of it actually happening?
I'd love to give you an answer, but I couldn't. I can't even tell you if I'll be allowed out of my house next week. It's like the short term attitude or the horizon for anything in Australia is very shallow. What I do know is that if it happens, it won't. I mean, it's pretty obvious to say it won't look like Australian Grand Prix in the past. There'll be rules around it. I think the most likely situation which it happens will be a almost like an Abu Dhabi 2020 kind of situation, a very bubble kind of thing where people are transported to and from the hotel. Everyone will have to be vaccinated, obviously, which will probably be more than other people in Australia vaccinated. But it's too hard to say, you know. It's a combination of health and politics and money, of course. And it's just impossible to say. But I know that they're working really hard to try and get it happen, because not only, I mean, people who run the Grand Prix here want to run a Grand Prix, it's their job, and they haven't done it for a while. But also, hosting an international event is, of course, a big sign that things are getting back to normal. And after the 18 months we've had here, and are continuing to have here, it's, of course, a morale booster and all that kind of thing. So if it can happen, it will, but I don't know if it can.
But there's one thing in your favor. Look back where Europe was 3 months ago and where Europe is now. And in that case, time could be in your favor, because 3 months, a lot can happen in 3 months, and maybe that will be your favor. I would be very happy if we go there. We do a double. Huh? Let's do a double.
Oh, yeah,
and we can then. I'd love to do it. Because if we have to go there anyway, I mean, going
I'd rather go for 2 weeks than one.
There you go.
Yeah. 2 weeks hotel quarantine, 2 weeks for the race. They are very eager for that tarmac to be used. They're very excited about the tarmac at the Grand Prix. The pit lane, they could tell you all about it. They'd love to use it, but, you know, it's a little bit out of their hands.
MotoGP has been cancelled, so how can, which is just, I think it's even in the same month. It's the first weekend, and then we're due a couple of weekends later in, was it November we're going? So, yeah, I don't see how MotoGP can be cancelled or is due to be cancelled in the next couple of days, and then this can go ahead.
As you say, MotoGP was meant to happen or is scheduled to happen only a couple of weeks beforehand. I think it's October, and then our Grand Prix is obviously November. And without knowing, of course, what the situation for quarantine and immigration and all that kind of stuff is, that puts a lot of pressure, those two events in such a small period of time, on, let's say, the health infrastructure. Doubly so when Phillip Island is relatively remote. It's not that close to the city. So the operation there, again, would be completely different to a race in Melbourne where we already have quarantine hotels set up. So I can imagine why it would be more difficult to run a motorcycle Grand Prix down there. And, you know, if you were to choose between them, and this is no disrespect to MotoGP, which is a terrific event, but the Formula One Grand Prix is higher profile in Australia and internationally. So I guess if the organisation had to pick one and they had to gamble on one of them happening, you'd pick the one that's probably going to get the greater attention.
Yeah, don't forget MotoGP. If you look at the Formula One bubble and the Formula One paddock itself, I talked to Ross Brawn, and Ross thinks about 85% of everybody working in F1 is vaccinated. In MotoGP, you have these Moto3 guys who are 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, and they're not even close of getting vaccinated. So I feel that is one of the problems MotoGP has, because they've also cancelled their Japanese round. And I still think that if the Olympics go on, Formula One will go to Japan, because by that time, we will be the complete, say like that, vaccinated circus, which can travel around the world.
I know everybody's got a lot to do in preparation for the next race, which is, of course, another Austrian Grand Prix. But before we go, I'd like to find out from each of you who you think is going to be world champion by the end of the year, because you knew it was coming. So I just have to ask, don't I? We'll start with Michael, then we'll go to Rebecca, and then we will go to Olav. So Michael, please start us off.
Well, without sounding like a Nico Rosberg YouTube thumbnail, is Lewis Hamilton's career over? Explosion. I'm willing to say Max Verstappen. I'm not convinced by it. I'm by no means being definitive, but he's in the lead at the moment. So what else have I got to go on?
Lewis Hamilton by a sliver. I think we will be only finding out in Abu Dhabi.
What was the question again?
Just say Valtteri Bottas and wrap it up.
Oh, Nico Rosberg.
That's where I thought Michael was going at the beginning of this, when he said came out with Nico Rosberg. I was like, he's gone. Just move on. So who Olav, will be champion at the end of the season?
I'll take the easy way out. The guy on top of the standings.
Unbelievable.
That's what being a veteran of the sport does to you. You know, there are too many twists and turns.
Now, I hope it's going to be like it is now. I really hope it's going to be a hell of a fight. And I hope Max is going to win it, because then at least he can say that he beat Lewis, the great Lewis Hamilton, in a championship. If Lewis wins an eighth, there might be a reason for him to say, that's it, I've won them all, see you later. And then Max will be the one who says, I've never been able to beat him on track. So because of that, I hope it will be Max. Only because of that. Not because I'm Dutch. Not because I like him. Because I think it's good. Not because of the Dutch army. Not because I'm trying to take the pee out of you, but because of that.
Think how bad the traffic will be getting into tracks if Max wins a championship in the following year. It's just no good. It's not good for the sport.
No, it's going to be mayhem.
It will be good for Netflix, though. They will be laughing at the end of this season. It looks like they were going to have season four will be absolute fireworks. And you can guarantee they'll be in the right place at the right time because somehow they just managed to do that, don't they?
Well, that's actually the upside of most people not being in the paddock is that they can get around a lot easier. I remember, I think it was the Christian Horner was saying that boom is always there. Like whenever you turn around, it's like Netflix. Oh, like where did you come from?
It is boom. Weird. Because you are stood there when I used to be allowed in a pit lane. I remember sometime in the dim and distant past, you would stand there and all of a sudden you'd just see this thing coming over your head and you'd be like, oh, hi, Netflix. Never asked. Just busted.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That's what it was.
Yeah, we are saying our lives away now. Basically, as soon as you pick up your pass, you're like, Netflix are free to film as you like, and you're in sessions, and you're like, where did you come from?
We will all be delighted when we're back in the paddock full time, and Netflix can bother us as much as they like. Don't care.
Right.
Olav, Michael Beck, thank you so much for your time. I hope you enjoy the next few races, and let's see what the season gives us. For now, I'll say bye-bye to you all.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye,
see you, Michael.
Thank you.
Bye-bye,
see
Rebecca.
You
all. Bye-bye.